Coming up, Tom Haberstroh and I go through our naughty or nice list for NBA teams and players around the league. That's coming up right now. Merry Christmas, everybody, for our Christmas edition episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. We're going to help out Santa Claus with his naughty or nice list. Tom Haberstroh, how are you?
I'm doing good. Only a couple more nights left of Elf on the Shelf in the Haberstroh household. The parents are very excited about getting to Christmas. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Christmas, too, for my aunt's lasagna she makes every single year. My grandpa's old recipe. I'm very excited for that on Christmas Day. So let's get started, Tom. Let's go with the nice list first. Let's be nice. Christmas week in the NBA. Where do you want to start on our nice list?
Okay, so I've got a couple teams here that I want to highlight, but first, the Boston Celtics, Kevin. I don't think people understand what's going on with the Celtics this year. The fact that they're third in the NBA in offensive rating after losing Jason Tatum and having basically overhauled the entire rotation outside of Peyton Pritchard, Derek White, and Jaylen Brown. And the way that they're doing it, Kevin, is super unorthodox. Right? Like we've been accustomed to hearing about how the new pace and space NBA is up tempo, get downhill, kick out to shooters. The Celtics do everything subverted. Yes, they take a lot of threes, but they also take the second most mid-range long twos in the NBA under Joe Mazzulla. They're bottom five in drives. They're bottom five in pace, actually bottom three in offensive pace. And they don't pass the ball. They're bottom five in passes per game. And they get to their spots. And I think the Boston Celtics are redefining what it looks like to have a modern NBA offense. They don't try to run up and down the floor. They don't use the corners. They use the corner three the least in the NBA. And Peyton Pritchard just put on a masterpiece against the Toronto Raptors where he's finding shooters in the paint. Namias Keita has been outstanding in the lobs that they're throwing, the lob threat that he has been bringing to this offense. It's just, I got to give a shout out to Joe Mazzulla and the Boston Celtics for reinventing themselves and still producing 120 points every 100 possessions, Kev, that have them at number three in the Eastern Conference. And it seems like no one's really talking about that. This is one of the elite offenses in the NBA without Jason Tatum.
Without Jason Tatum. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd. I think for the Celtics, there was an argument before the season that they'd be a playoff team and that they'd be competitive. Everybody was saying, well, where are the Celtics going to be? Where are the Pacers going to be without their stars? Celtics third in the East, though. I mean, that's the part that's unthinkable, the fact that they're this good. I thought they might be a six seed, right? Maybe a five even, but the three seed right now, and granted, it's so early at this point, Tom. Your point about their offense is spot on. The way in which they just continue clicking and the way they are playing their own style, and credit to Joe Mazzulla for adapting to the personnel on the team. And also, I mean, the big question entering the year was, how are some of these guys going to step up in the absence of Jason Tatum? Derek White, really slow start, has been better as of late. Jaylen Brown should be a lock all-star starter. Right now, he'd be, you know, top five on my All-NBA, or at least top seven-ish All-NBA teams at this point, too. And then guys like Hugo Gonzalez. Tom, I mean, what a steal for the Celtics, taking him in the late first round. I can't believe how good he is already. I know, big ups to like Jonathan Givony, all his draft coverage last year. He was higher on Gonzalez than I think anybody was. I remember having him on my pod, and he's like, Gonzalez is overlooked, underrated, because for Real Madrid last year, he barely played. But he's come in right away as a two-way guy, you know, near the tops of the NBA, if not number one, in plus-minus for rookies, right up there with VJ Edgecombe. I mean, the dude has just been outstanding with his energy on defense, and then offensively just cutting, moving, hitting spot-up threes. Dude looks like a long-term NBA player for sure.
Yeah, and he's 19. He's still a teenager. Rookies 19. In general shouldn't be a positive player. Like, we've seen the statistical studies to show that, like, rookies, very rarely do you see them come into the NBA right away being an add to the team. It takes a few years, especially if you're a teenager who really didn't get much run last year, like you point out. And so for them to have a system which a guy like this can step in, plug and play right away, get minutes, shooting 53% from the floor, 44% from downtown as a teenager, dude, Kev, great find for the Boston Celtics and Brad Stevens.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now Pistons fans are probably saying, oh, you're going to talk about the Celtics and not about our team. Well, let's talk about your team, the Detroit Pistons, because they're on my nice list this year. Pistons, they 2 years ago, 14-68. Last year, 44-38, the sixth seed. This year, 22-6, the one seed in the Eastern Conference. Cade Cunningham, top five MVP candidate so far this year. Just the manipulation, the step he's taking forward offensively in pick and rolls. Jalen Duren talked about him in the pod a few weeks back after he hit a couple off the dribble jumpers, but even besides the extra stuff, big two-way leap for him, very consistent. Malik Beasley out. Duncan Robinson has been great, their best shooter by far. More on that in a second. Caris LeVert, pretty solid as well. Isaiah Stewart, been one of the NBA's best defenders in the entire league this year. The Pistons, man. I mean, I feel like they are a Tobias Harris upgrade away from being favorites in the East. Right now, I'd give the edge to the Knicks. I still think the Celtics with Tatum belong in that conversation as well. But the Pistons are right there, man. And the East is wide open. Wide open, Tom. And I think they're just a slight upgrade away from being possibly considered the favorite in the East entering the playoffs in April.
Again, a team that doesn't really play the brand of basketball that the NBA seems to be trending in with the amount of threes that they take. They don't take a ton of threes, even with Duncan Robinson. They just play bully ball. They're super physical. They get to the line a ton with Jalen Duren and Isaiah Stewart, two of the toughest, strongest interior guys, paint presences in the league. It's hard to find someone. Maybe it's Alpi and Steven Adams that you would want to see in the paint, just like a bloodbath with those guys. I love watching this team play basketball, and I love the fact that they do it in very different ways than what is kind of the conforming NBA offense. And Cade Cunningham, they're just so big, dude. They're huge out there. And I do love that Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren are kind of bringing back the Bad Boys Pistons with how physical they are and how strong they are. I don't think guys want to go in the paint downhill with them walling off the paint there. It is really hard to score against the Pistons. And with Cade Cunningham at the controls, Jalen Duren has been able to blossom in ways that, you know, we expect him to be a paint presence defensively, but offensively, man, Jalen Duren, one of the best, most improved candidates this season. It's hard to find someone who's been better offensively, taking more leaps offensively than that guy.
You know, you mentioned the shooting, Tom, how different they are, the way in which they play. They're 27th in the NBA in three-point attempts, 21st in three-point percentage. Duncan Robinson this year, 7.3 attempts per game, 39.5% from three. He's been sensational, as he always is as a shooter. But other than that, like, they don't have anybody. They don't have any high-volume, high-efficiency shooters. And I think that's where I look at the Pistons, and I'm like, yeah, it's working great during the regular season. And yes, you know, you don't have to be the highest volume three-point shooting team, but I do think with them, it would be nice, again, to upgrade that Tobias Harris slot. If they can flip him and with they have all of their future picks and go get a Michael Porter Jr., a Lauri Markkanen, whoever it is, and just it would just raise their ceiling so much with what they could be. And that's where with the Pistons, I hope they belong in the nice list. They're an awesome story with their trajectory. They've been on the last 2 years, 14 wins to 44 wins to right now on pace to be the number one seed in the East Wing, 22 of 28 games to start the year. I hope this front office is not complacent. I hope they're not complacent with being a very nice story. I hope they go for it because the East is open. What's your next one, Tom, for the nice list?
Yeah, talk about complacency and going for it. Let's talk about Stephen Curry. What an amazing season he's had this season. It's kind of getting lost because we're talking about LeBron and the Lakers and him being 41 years old. But a guy who's 37, averaging 32 points a game coming from back from injury, 48-point night, a 36-point night in back-to-back games. It's just kind of absurd that this is the norm for Stephen Curry now. And it's a real shame that we're watching this guy at this stage of his career have to go and basically anchor a 500 team where there seems to be like a locker room mutiny happening with Jonathan Kuminga and a constant controversy with the Warriors. And I feel like we're due for a mix-up in Golden State. We're due for something to shake things up because we need to, as you say, we need to not take Stephen Curry for granted. The guy is unreal, shooting 59% on twos, 40% on threes, and 90% on the free throws at age 37. He's averaging about 29 points a game, ninth in the NBA in scoring. And I feel like maybe we're not talking about it enough, like, because I guess the Warriors are like a 500 team, but he's operating like one of the best and still most gravitational pull players we've ever seen in the NBA. Maybe the highest gravity we've ever seen in the NBA. And he's still doing it. Defenses are still having nightmares trying to guard this guy.
Well, Tom, I'll tell you what. You remember about a month ago when I said on Threads, Draymond Green and Jimmy Butler have to step up. Can't just blame the young guys. The old guys got to step up too to give Steph the support they need. Draymond got very mad at me. Then he had his two best defensive games of the year against Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs. He was sensational in those games. But the other day, the Warriors broke a losing streak, beating the Phoenix Suns. And I'll tell you what, they looked a hell of a lot better offensively with Draymond Green playing only 8 minutes in that game. Way better collectively as a team around Stephen Curry. And with Draymond, if he is not performing at that all defensive level, which he can, again, he showed it a month ago against the Spurs, against Wemby. He completely just shut him down and made Wemby look like the young player that he is. If he's not playing at that level offensively, it just feels like the Warriors are worse than Draymond right now. And that's where I think with this team, again, if Jimmy Butler can elevate his play, if Draymond Green can be more consistent on defense, and if the Warriors can flip that Kuminga money into something else and upgrade the roster around Steph, they can't take Stephen Curry for granted with the player he still is at this stage of his career. And the Warriors front office, they're on the naughty list for sure. They're on the naughty list. And they have to maximize the opportunity with this all-timer. They can't just sit on what they have. They can't. They have to be willing to trade everybody besides Stephen Curry, of course, in order to upgrade the roster around him. Everybody has to be on the table.
Well, they showed that after they let Klay Thompson walk, that they're willing to, you know, let these franchise cornerstones move on if it makes sense for them going forward with Stephen Curry. The issue is now you're hearing a lot of talk about Klay Thompson coming back to Golden State, and this nostalgia pull might be coming back, where it's like, do we really want to give up Draymond Green and take him away from Stephen Curry after everything that they've been through? But to your point, man, Draymond Green is turning 36 in March. Like, this is a normal age curve of a guy who's not able to bring it every single night. That's what happens when you're 36 years old in the NBA typically, which is why Stephen Curry is so much of an outlier, that Draymond Green, he can do that with Wemby. One night, every couple games, he can bring that. But 36-year-olds historically in the NBA, with all those miles on the tires, they're not able to do this every single night. So Kevin, on one hand, I'm like, yeah, Draymond needs to step up more. But on the other, I'm like, he's 36. You shouldn't expect him to be like in his prime. And so it's almost like Stephen Curry, KD, and LeBron have redefined what it means to be, you know, 30 late in your late 30s. And other guys are like, this is unfair, man. I'm 36 out here. You can't expect me to be guarding Wemby every night. You know what I'm saying?
I know. 100% the truth. 100%. And that's why with the Warriors, it's so disappointing that they whiffed on so many draft picks. If they had hit on some of those picks, it would be perfectly acceptable for Draymond to be on and off, hot and cold. It would be perfectly fine. And this team would be near the tops of the Western Conference if they hit on Franz Wagner instead of on Jonathan Kuminga. If they had drafted a Şengün. Right. If they had hit on some of these picks, if instead of James Wiseman, maybe if it was LaMelo Ball, maybe his career looks way different if he ends up with the Warriors rather than in Charlotte. Who knows how different things would be with like the butterfly effect for a guy like that. You're right on, Tom. And I think ultimately I said last week on the pod, I forget if it was with you or somebody else, I wouldn't trade Draymond unless it's for like the right return. I just think he's so important to that identity of the team, that knowing that he can turn it on come playoff time, unless I'm replacing that heartbeat, I don't think I would trade Draymond Green. It's everybody else. It's Butler, Kuminga, Moses Moody, Buddy Hield, all those guys are on the table. But Draymond, I prefer to keep him rather than move him if I'm the Warriors. Next on my nice list, Tom, the clutch time Minnesota Timberwolves, because they've been a lot better so far this year. We saw Anthony Edwards, what he did on Saturday against the Oklahoma City Thunder with the third loss of the year for the Thunder. Anthony Edwards hit a big-time go-ahead three-pointer in the final 40 seconds of the game. Step back over Cason Wallace, an amazing jumper, gave them the lead. And then the possession after, OKC inbounded the ball, and Anthony Edwards helped defense, blocked SGA, then kind of corralled Caruso after he grabbed an offensive board. And then Ant stayed in the paint, gripped down a rebound over Dort, and then next play down after two free throws by the Wolves, he stole the ball from SGA to clinch the game. Wolves beat the Thunder. Third loss of the year for OKC. And Minnesota wins again. 9-6 now in clutch time. They won again against the Bucks on Sunday. 9-6, up from 20-26 last year. Last two seasons, Minnesota's really struggled in clutch time. Minus 8.4 net rating last year. In the last 5 minutes when the score was within five, minus 13.1 the year prior. This year, they're plus 7.8. Their defensive rating has been better, 100 defensive rating in the final five, up from 114.8 last year, 117.2 the year prior. Anthony Edwards shooting the hell out of it, 79% true shooting, up from 58% last year, which is not bad, and 53% the year prior, but he's playing at an absurd level. The Wolves' defense has been better in the last 5 minutes. The team as a whole has been better in the last 5 minutes offensively, and they've just flipped their numbers pretty much. Minus 8.4 last year to plus 7.8 net rating in the last 5 minutes of clutch time. I've been impressed, Tom, and I thought Saturday was kind of that moment that made it pretty obvious what Minnesota's turned into in the closing moments of games this year.
100%. And the NBA needs this, right? The NBA needs Anthony Edwards to be as cinematic as he was over this weekend. I mean, that is exactly what you want to watch when you're an NBA fan, is this Anthony Edwards he's as box office as it gets. And for him to be coming up clutch against OKC, it's a signature moment for Anthony Edwards and the Minnesota Timberwolves that have had, frankly, an up and down season, and they're still struggling to return to that defensive identity and be able to score just enough to be at the top title tier. But when you look at the clutch time performance from Anthony Edwards and the rest of the team and the two-way ball, this guy wants it, man. Like, I know he says he doesn't want to be the face of the NBA, but you clearly can see that he has a chip on his shoulder, that he does not like OKC, and he wants people to know it, and he takes this with immense pride. I love watching Anthony Edwards play basketball, but when he's playing like this in clutch performances, it feels like the young generation of basketball fans, that's their guy. That's the guy that they want to be taking the mantle from LeBron and Steph and KD. Anthony Edwards is playing like that. And sometimes it is those high leverage clutch moments that really make an imprint on the audience. And I do think this weekend was a big, big moment for Anthony Edwards.
I'm right there with you, Tom. And they have a big test this week. They face the NBA Cup champions, the New York Knicks, on Tuesday. And then on Christmas Day, Wolves face the Nuggets. So look forward to that one. What's your next one on the nice list, Tom?
I know this is kind of left field, but after watching two Kings games, I got to tell you, man, I'm giving a Maxime Raynaud on the nice list this year.
Love it.
KOC, this dude can ball. This guy's good.
Let's go. Another French basketball player.
Yo. Like, I got to tell you, I have been watching every Sacramento Kings game this season, but what a breath of fresh air this guy is. He's 7 foot one, super skilled around the basket, huge shoulders, and he's averaging, you know, a modest 10 points a game. But in the last three games, he had 29 and 11 against the Blazers. And on the broadcast, we were like, yo, this guy, he's like a not just a starter, but he's got a bright future in the league, runs the floor really well, gets up and down. His rim protection isn't where you need to be, but like Sacramento Kings, like point of attack defense isn't great. And so he's putting out a lot of fires, but came out of Stanford 20 and 10 last year in the ACC. And this is a guy, one of three players, Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, as the other two, who have done 20 and 10 in a high power, like power five conference, 20 to 10 with another 53 point attempts made. This guy's super skilled, fell to the second round, 42nd pick for the Sacramento Kings. And I think probably because people look at these guys in the same way they looked at Jalen Brunson, in the same way they looked at Jalen Wells, in the same way they looked at Ryan Kalkbrenner, where it's like, do we want to waste a second round pick on a 22 year old? Yeah, go take these guys. If they can play, if they can hoop, get these guys. And I love when teams go in the second round and just get hoopers. This guy, Maxime Raynaud, is a hooper. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's on the French national team and doing really good work for them in the Olympics or going forward. He's really good, Kev.
Yeah, he's legit good. I had him 15th on my board prior to this year. I thought it was just insane that he fell as far as he did into the 40s to the Kinks. I still am baffled by it. I still don't completely understand it. I think it's, as you said, Tom, teams looked at his defense and they're like, well, he's in his early 20s already. How much more can he improve there? And understandably so. And they questioned if the offense would translate in the ways that it has. But already, he's doing the type of stuff he did off the dribble at Stanford. You know, he's shooting the ball well. He's showing his versatility as a seven-footer. I love that dude. I like the Kings youth as a whole. Neek Clifford, I still really like him as well. And I know, you know, I thought you might put Russell Westbrook when you said Kings. I thought it might be Russell Westbrook that you put on after he had a nice weekend for himself. He's putting up numbers this season. But I'm glad you went with the youth, Tom. I'm very happy you went with the youth in Sacramento. That's the way I feel about him.
I just feel like he might be the steal of the draft. This guy might be the steal of the draft. And we've talked, you know, before about what the Hornets have done with their draft last year. Fantastic. But I think we need to give a shout out to what seems like a little silver lining in what's been a really tough season for the Sacramento Kings. This guy can hoop, and he's looking like the steal of the draft in the NBA.
I love that one. I'm going to, for my next one on the nice list, I'm going to give it to the Indiana Pacers, because for the whole 2025 calendar year, they make the finals. They go to a game seven, because last year at this time, Tom, they were not so good as a team, and they had an unbelievable second half of the year after the NBA Cup, go to the finals, suffer trauma, you know, game seven, Tyrese Haliburton gets hurt. And this year has not gone well for them, obviously, in terms of the win-loss column, but it has gone quite well for them in terms of the lottery standings. They're 6-22. They have currently the second best odds to get the number one pick in the draft. And I think for Pacers fans, I'm putting them on here on the nice list, because the whole full year, they made the finals, they deserve a mention, and they're playing it right this year, Tom. Tank! Tank! Get a tank! Do it! You gotta maximize your odds. This is how you, this is what you're supposed to do.
Wait, does this mean that the Celtics are doing it wrong, Kevin? They're both on our nice list.
No, the Celtics are doing it right too, because they're too good to tank. They're too good to tank, and they have a chance to win the NBA Finals this year because Tatum might come back. He might come back. Haliburton is not coming back, so that's a full certainty. That's the difference between those two teams entering the year. The Celtics thought, Tatum might return. Well, we might as well try to win games and maximize a wide-open East year. The Pacers, they know Haliburton's not returning. Let's tank our asses off. So yeah, they belong on the nice list for that reason, after really, obviously, an up-and-down year. But I think they belong on it. The Thunder belong on it too, Tom. If what we're doing is like some stocking stuffers here, some quick hitters, the Thunder, they make the finals. They start the year 25-3. They deserve a mention for sure. Some breakout guys like Ryan Rollins with the Bucks. We've talked about him on the pod a bunch this year. He belongs on the nice list. Keontae George, big year three leap for him, a silver lining for the Utah Jazz. Colin Gillespie hitting big time shots, playing big time minutes for the Suns as well. Now moving into the starting lineup. Michael Porter Jr. I know a lot of people might put him on the naughty list for off-court reasons, but on-court reasons, he has been
naughty
excellent.
Is a particular word. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
He's been excellent on the court. I mean, maintaining his elite efficiency with the highest volume of his entire career. To me, he should be at the top of almost every single contender's trade targets. Davion Mitchell, Jalen Johnson. I mean, this could go on forever for the nice list. If you want to do some quick hit stocking stuffers here, but I mean, any of those names stand out to you, Tom, of the ones I just mentioned?
Yeah, I just want to give some shout outs to Derek Queen, who has been one of the great stories of the league. He is the Cajun Queen. He's the Jambalaya Jokic that I like to call him. He's the Big Easy. Fans in New Orleans are very upset with me because I'm coming up with new nicknames, and they're like, dude, he's already the Big Easy. He's already Cajun Queen. Let's go. And I'm like, whatever it is, whatever that needs to stick with this guy, I want all the fans to watch this guy play basketball. He's a lot of fun. And I do think that some of these teams that are at the bottom of the standings do deserve shout outs because look, they're trying. 82 games is a long season, man. And so any of these bright spots that you're pointing out with the Pacers or with Michael Porter Jr. or Derek Queen, it's important to give a shout out because it's a long season. It's a long season and it's a long career for Reed Sheppard because everyone was writing him off last year as a huge bust. And the dude is really good at basketball. And I know it's a bad loss for the Houston Rockets as we're recording this, but Reed Sheppard, man, over the weekend, when he gets on a heater, there are a few guys who are as electric as it is with Reed Sheppard. The confidence is always there and the efficiency is always there. And it's starting to happen. It's starting to click for Reed Sheppard, which is a big reason why we both were big on him on draft night. And also coming into this season, my pick, I think it was yours too, wasn't it? Sixth man of the year, Reed Sheppard.
I believe so. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So he's coming together, man. So, shout out to them. And I'm excited to see where we go after the Christmas break. Everyone likes to say, oh, the NBA season doesn't start until Christmas. But man, there's a lot of cool stories around the league.
If you want to be on our nice list, please be sure to subscribe to @YahooNBA on YouTube. We just launched our own YouTube channel where we're having my podcast, Tom Haverstraw's podcast, The Dunker Spot. We're doing breakdown videos on there as well. So be sure to check out @YahooNBA, subscribe there, and then you'll be on our nice list as well. You don't want to be on the naughty list. We'll talk about the naughty list in another second. That's enough for the nice list. Let's move on to the naughty list, Tom. Do you want to start off here with the naughty list as well?
Yeah, I'm gonna raise a banner here for the New York Knicks, a shame banner. Like this is the New York Knicks not raising a banner for the NBA Cup is shameful. It is, Kev, because you got Harry Styles banners, you got Fish banners, and you got Billy Joel banners. You got Atlantic Division banners from way back in the day. And it's like, come on here. Like, I know the NFL gets made fun of for protect the shield and all this stuff. I feel like we need to protect the logo a little bit. And the fact that the New York Knicks and James Dolan basically gave a middle finger to the NBA and the league office, flipped the bird at them with a kazoo and said, hey, we're not raising a banner after winning the NBA Cup. I think it's shameful. It's embarrassing. And it's such a bummer. It's a buzzkill for a run that they had. The Knicks, we should be raising all of the praise and the symbolism of how great the Knicks were when in the regular season, man, it's a long season. This mid-season tournament, the NBA Cup, is really cool. And I feel like now it's almost got this like scarlet letter or some sort of like, hey, we did do that thing, but James Dolan told me not to get excited about it. So maybe we don't reference it. I know we didn't pod last week together, so I kind of wanted to sneak this in here as one of my on the naughty list is James Dolan and the Knicks for being a buzzkill about the banner thing, man. It doesn't make any sense.
I'll give you a thumbs up to that, Tom.
Gross, dude. Don't do that. Don't do that.
I won't do
Please
that.
Please don't.
Not a Josh Hart thumbs up. Not one of those.
Kev, I think also like the fact that like, oh man, it's hard to move on from that. But yeah, I think it's when I'm looking at this story, it's not just about the Knicks though, because I feel like what we saw from Chris Haynes reporting last week, Chris Haynes saying like the Lakers might now take down the banner that they have.
It's so stupid. It's so dumb.
It's like, what are just we hang, doing just, here? Adam just, Silver must be just going nuts right banner. Now.
It's for the fans and also it is for the players too. Like you saw a genuine, fun, serious celebration from the Knicks after that. They were all super, super happy. Hang the banner. You don't even have to make it like a big whole thing. You don't have to like raise the banner when the players are on the court. You can just put the banner up and like shine it. You know what I'm saying? You don't need to do the big opening night banner raise ceremony. You can just have it up there and unveil it, shine a light on it. Like it doesn't need to be as big as an NBA Finals banner is. I think there should be something up, especially as you said, Tom, given they've got Harry Styles. I was at one of those shows, by the way, one of those Harry Styles shows with June Lee, who does great coverage.
Were you just like, you know, they should hang a banner?
No, but it was a sensational show. It was a great crowd, great energy in the building, but not banner worthy necessarily.
I wanted to ask you about this. Do you think musicians have this debate on whatever KOC show equivalent is? Like, hey, I feel like the Knicks should, the MSG should raise a banner for this, for my band.
I mean, like, that's just a, James Dolan is a, James Dolan's a music geek. That I think that's why they do it. I don't know if do other arenas, it's actually a good question. Do other arenas raise banners for artists that play there? Because I'm not.
Yeah, let us know in the comments. I don't know.
Yeah, let us know for sure. Because I don't think so. I think this is a James Dolan thing that they do in MSG, and so therefore it's also a James Dolan choice not to raise the NBA Cup banner, but they should. I'm with you, Tom. I think he belongs on the naughty list, and that's me. Despite me also going to the Sphere in Vegas, bringing Emmy and Sarah, are two of our amazing producers who were there in Vegas for the NBA Cup as well. We saw the Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz at the Sphere. And James Dolan belongs on the nice list for the Sphere every year, but he's on the naughty list for not raising the NBA Cup banner. So I'm with you there, Tom, for that choice. The Lakers shouldn't take it down. The Bucks should put one up retroactively as well. It's over time, these teams are going to look, I think, silly for not having these banners up. That's my prediction. They're going to look silly for not having them raised. So I'm going to move on to the first one on my naughty list here, Tom. And that's Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley belongs on the naughty list because he was the guy who was supposed to take a big leap this year for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And instead, he's taken a step back. So far this season, he's 10 for 21 on the year on post-ups, 5 for 17 on isolations. Has not shown a great ability to create space off the dribble. Getting around guys, he's really struggled to create quality shots for himself. And one of the things we're seeing a lot of players do in the NBA is use their strength to create because they're not calling a lot of offensive fouls. Mobley does not have the strength to do that. He's not taking advantage of smaller players on the post. And for that matter, he's not finishing. 8 of 23 on rolls to the basket out of the pick and roll. 6 for 23 on pick and pops this year. The worst scoring efficiency of his entire career since he was a rookie. This guy was supposed to take a leap, and it's not happening. And right now he's out injured for Cleveland, so who knows when he'll be back. But big-time disappointment so far this year for the Cavaliers is Evan Mobley.
Let me ask you a question. If you were the Milwaukee Bucks, would you trade Giannis Antetokounmpo for Evan Mobley right now?
No. He's the most overrated asset in basketball, Evan Mobley is. Wow. What is the deal with him? I don't get it. I really don't get it. He's a great defensive player, obviously. But offensively, I mean, the dude is above average. I am not seeing it with Evan Mobley. I've always been an Evan Mobley skeptic. I continue to be an Evan Mobley skeptic. This was supposed to be the year he took a leap. It has not happened. He has shown no signs of taking that leap this year. And maybe by the end of the year, I'll end up looking silly, Tom. That's possible. That wouldn't be the first time. He's shown flashes in the past, but it's been these quick little spurts. He's never sustained it. So no, I would not do that if I'm the Bucks. I think I can do way better than Evan Mobley if I'm the Milwaukee Bucks for Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, I think Evan Mobley had one of these default Defensive Player of the Year votes last year. Like, I didn't think he was the Defensive Player of the Year. I think because Wemby got hurt and because of the fact that Amen Thompson was a wing rather than a rim protector, like a big, like,
should have been Amen. Should have been Amen Thompson.
Yeah, totally in agreement with you on that one. So, yes, he was Defensive Player of the Year, and he's a guy who's got some passing ability. I think the Bam Adebayo comps coming out of college felt like this is the ceiling, is a guy who can be a playmaking big, a point center. And he hasn't been able to do that with Jared Allen being out. There have been a lot of opportunities, Kevin, for him to make the leap. We see a lot of stars around the league, whether it's Austin Rivers or Denny Avdia. When there's injuries to your team, there's a lot of opportunities to step forward and solidify yourself as a no-doubt all-star. And Evan Mobley hasn't taken that step. It's a great point by you. And I do think that when you talk about his value around the league, I feel like it's still, we're talking about potential with him when he's 24 years old. Like, this is, we're getting to be at the point where he is reaching his potential and he hasn't taken the step forward, and he's plateaued, if not gotten worse this season. And Kev, he's a big reason why the Cleveland Cavaliers are not the most disappointing team in the NBA, because that would be the Clippers. But Eastern Conference-wise, They got to be the most disappointing team.
I'm with you there. I mean, look, I think with Mobley, one of the things with him is like entering the NBA, it was like, well, if he can figure out the shot, you know, if he can figure that out. And, you know, he's became a 37% guy from three on a low volume, but he's still like a not a high touch player. He's still sub 70% from the free throw line, very streaky up and down from 3-point range. And the lack of strength, Tom, that's the thing. Like so many players in the NBA are just putting their shoulder into the chest of defenders in order to generate a shot opportunity or draw a foul. That used to be something that referees would call a foul that they no longer seem to be doing. Mobley doesn't have that strength to create space for himself and create opportunities just to go through guys. So if he can't get around guys, he's not getting through guys. I just don't think he has any single offensive skill to be a star offensively. I think defensively, he's great. Defensive player of the year caliber. I mean, he just won it, of course, but I don't think he's a top three defender in the league personally. I think this guy is a bit overrated as an asset. People talk about him like he's in his second year. He's in year five at this point. I just wonder, like, when does that conversation change from potential to, oh, wait a minute, this guy has come nowhere close to meeting our expectations with what he could be. And so, yes, he's one of the reasons why, of many, not just his own fault, not just him, why the Cleveland Cavaliers have been a big disappointment. Who's next on your naughty list, Tom?
All right, next on the naughty list, you talk about fouls. The next guy or the next entity on the naughty list is the NBA referees. Kevin, the NBA referee and player, team, coach relations are as bad as I can remember. The referees are spiraling out of control in ways that the players don't seem to trust them, the coaches don't seem to trust them, and whether it's the incompetence by the referees in the view of the players and the coaches that seem to be getting texts and ejections and fines like no other. Kev, four players and coaches got fined by the league office just last week. Chris Finch, David Adelman, Marcus Smart, and Ime Udoka all got fined for criticizing officials or flipping the bird at officials. In the case of Marcus Smart, got fined $35,000 for just before halftime. I didn't see any video of this, but the league office fined Marcus Smart over the weekend for flipping the bird at one of the officials, I don't know whether it's Pat Freer or Gediminas Petraitis or I don't know who it was, but every night it seems, Kevin, that there is a referee controversy. And I can't remember a time when we saw four fines, referee related fines, in one week. Kev, there was only one before that this season that I could find that the NBA issued a fine about officiating. And we got four back to back to back to back. And then on top of that, you have J.J. Redick calling out the league office and the officiating for being inconsistent and being non-communicative in all of his feedback in the portal, the coaches portal. He went in a post-game press conference and called out the league for inconsistent refereeing and no communication. And for these officials, I mean, for these coaches, it feels like we're reaching a boiling point. Like they've had it. David Adelman, I haven't seen David Adelman do this, but he ran out at Tyler Ricks the other night and got in his face like, what the F are you doing out there? Because of the officiating on Nikola Jokic. And it just seems like things are spiraling out of control. And the NBA, all the stakeholders, they got to come together here because the integrity of the game is being questioned by by coaches. Ime Udoka saying, look, the two referees shouldn't even be out there talking about two officials on their game the other night. And then you had JB Bickerstaff. He didn't get fined for this, but he also went after the officials in his post-game press conference the other night, saying that clearly one of the referees, in his estimation, was not being objective based on the comments that he made to JB Bickerstaff. And so this has reached a fever pitch. And with the sports betting that's going on in the league and the controversies and scandals off the court, Kev, it feels like the trust among fans and coaches and players, it's got to be nearing an all-time low with the referees. And I know they have a tough job, but things are really spiraling out of control here.
You're 100% right, everything you said, Tom. And I think for fans especially, there is a segment of fans, and not all hardcore fans, not people, you know, probably listening to this podcast, but people who turn on a game. And they're seeing more traveling than ever. They're seeing more moving screens than ever. And they're like, what happened in the game I love? There are a segment of fans who feel that way when they watch basketball. And I think, you know, what was it, the beginning of last year or the year before, it's blending together for me, when it felt like defense was back, Tom, yes. When they're like, it felt like
not back anymore,
teams man. Were allowed to defend. It's not back anymore. Offensive players are doing whatever the hell they want, not getting called for fouls. Defenders aren't allowed to defend. I think the value of defense has been declining in part because of the way the game is officiated. Officials steer the way in which the game is being played. And I think that aspect hurts fans as well, on top of the fact that, like you said, coaches and players, rightfully so, are expressing themselves and displaying their distrust towards the NBA officials. And when you combine it with all the gambling that we know has happened with certain players, and that clearly the NBA may have fears has happened with how much they've been open about, hey, let's put some limits on unders. You know, like, clearly there's concern within the league office about that as well. That's where we are today, but where could we be 3, 4, 5 months from now, if more big stories end up being found out?
Well, man, Chris Finch, he let him hear it. He had to be held back in the middle of a game. The big game over the weekend against OKC, we're 6 minutes into the game. He was like, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of the inconsistency, and it was vulgar. And I'm not trying to say, give excuses to the ref, to the coaches and the players. Like, there is a model of decorum that you have to meet, and clearly they're crossing a line here, but there's obvious, very obvious frustrations bubbling up with the players, with the coaches, and with front offices too, who are looking at the referee portal and all of the forms that they have to fill out and feeling like they're not getting heard and they're not getting what they feel like is the right communication. What JJ Redick did was, I don't think he's going to get fined for this, the fifth fine in the last week. But it was clear that, like, he's frustrated with the system. Now, two things that happened in the officiating circles I want to point out. See, Eric Lewis is back, Kevin?
Yeah, he's back. The hardcore Celtics fan.
Retired a couple years ago amid an investigation into his social media account, and then is going and officiating college basketball. Like, last week, I watching ACC basketball, and there's Eric Lewis. I don't think it's a coincidence that during this huge hysteria around the league about the officials and the level of officiating and the incompetency, that they're bringing back a finals referee after he was retired 2 years ago in the middle of the, you know, in the middle of the night. He just, in the middle of an investigation, he just decided, I'm going to hang it up, when he's now getting called back by the NBA and, you know, Patrick Beverley and LeBron. I'm sure they have an opinion about this with Eric Lewis coming back. And then secondly, Kevin, the whole Ala Abdelnaby controversy, where the NBA official refereeing count went after one of the game's top commentators for NBC Sports Philadelphia. Ala, former NBA player, was thinking that there was a call, late call in the Atlanta game with Philly, and he thought it was a backcourt violation. And out of nowhere, the NBA official referee account blasted the dude, and the local reporters for Liberty Ballers, Aaron Grugan, was like, wait, show me the rule book. Like, show me the rule where Allah's wrong. And the official referee account couldn't provide any documentation about the rule in the rule book because it didn't exist.
Wow.
Yeah. Because the rule is like, oh, momentum and positive positioning. And she's like, Aaron's like, what is that? Define momentum in the rule book, and it does not exist. And so the idea of Nickeil Alexander-Walker taking 1.5 steps in the front court and going into the back court at the last second possession between two very, very important teams in the Eastern Conference jockeying for playoff positioning, Ala Abdelnaby was like, I thought that was a back court. And the referee account just blasted him with condensation, with a level of, like, almost pettiness. And Ala, like, went back at him being like, stay being petty, NBA referees. And it just feels like when we talk about the the respect and trust among referees and all of the stakeholders in the game right now, it feels like everyone's on tilt. Everyone's on edge right now. And there has to be a solution here, because this right here, the NBA going after Allah for a very like obscure, and they say it's not obscure, it's not even in the rule book. This controversial, nuanced play is not even in the rule book. And it would be nice if they just like calmly said to Aaron and Allah, hey, here's the section in the rule book. This is the rule. Appreciate you calling it out. They didn't do that. They went the opposite. They went after these people. And I thought it was a bad look.
What do you think is the solution here, Tom, from the NBA standpoint? Is it, I'm sure if like you had Adam Silver and Monty McCutcheon and all them in a room and they had a lie detector attached or a truth serum, they had to take it. They'd be like, look, it's a really hard game too. Officiate. It's faster than it's ever been. It's more up and down than it's ever been. It's more physical, bigger players than it's ever been. That's probably what they might honestly say, unless the honesty is really ugly, unless it's something corrupt. I mean, then maybe that's something. But let's assume it's not that, and let's assume it's something to do with the speed and the physicality of the game today. What are the solutions? Is it adding a fourth referee? Or does adding a fourth referee just create more noise and more disagreement among calls? I mean, adding a fourth referee, it's hard enough to find good refs. You add a fourth one to the floor, it might be devaluing the good refs out there. So, like, what are some of the solutions here? Is it robot refs? Do we need to get those tracking cameras to start officiating games as well? Some AI refs out there? Is that what we need? Like, what are the solutions?
I think clearly there needs to be a change in the training of officials. How do officials get hired is a big question I hear from NBA personnel. Is like, they seem to have more job security than Supreme Court justices. Like, think about what Eric Lewis just went through.
It's ridiculous. You know?
He quote unquote retired.
Where's the punishment for these refs for screwing up?
Well, they don't get, like, what I hear from experts in the league and people who've been around the league is that they have almost no worries about losing their job because they haven't been fired. Like, there have been some issues where some veteran officials, and it might be adjudicated in the court system right now, that they lost their jobs based on during the COVID era. And there are some examples of referees that are no longer in refereeing full time anymore. Some very high, like profile NBA referees, they're not refereeing anymore. And it seems like those are the only ones that have not been brought back over the years, that they've decided, look, just like any other job, if you're not up to a level of competency and proficiency, we're going to let you go. And it just doesn't seem like there is any accountability on that front, where if you're hired to be an NBA referee 20 years ago, you're going to have that job for the rest of your life until you want to hang it up. And in what profession is there 100% job security? I haven't seen it. And I think that would be where I would start, is holding officials accountable and not having this like Supreme Court justice lifetime job that it seems like for I've been seeing the same referees for a long, long time. And it doesn't seem like they have the same sort of job security or accountability that every other job in America has, where if you're not performing at a level, we're going to let you go. Coaches, players, executives, they all have to be hired and fired. And there's a carousel of that workplace. And it doesn't seem like that's the case in NBA officials.
I guess that would raise the question, Tom, what is the metric? Like, if it's not about consistency, if it's not about having a game feel like it's the same in Boston on the same night that it is in Sacramento as it is in OKC, if that's not the metric, what's the metric? What is it that the NBA is actually caring about when it comes to those decisions? What is it? You know? What really matters?
What really matters is, of course, first and foremost, the integrity of the league, right? That's what's important. Mm-hmm. And when you have coaches and players routinely, as seemingly every night, questioning the integrity or at least the objectivity and the consistency, at some point, this tidal wave is going to crash on the NBA if it does not get handled. And James Jones, who's now, you know, running basketball ops for the NBA, he's got a tough job on his hand. And I think leadership is trying to figure out how to instill trust with the officials inside and outside the sport. They've brought in a new leader into the fold from Google. And I think, you know, Byron Spruell got called out by JJ Redick by name in the postgame press conference. And it does seem like the players, coaches, they all feel like there needs to be a solution here. And there has to be accountability by the officials. What that looks like, I think a lot of people around the league look at this system and say, they don't get hired and fired the same way we do. And they question, why is that? Why doesn't it seem like the NBA officials get measured in the same way that most professions in America get measured?
We shall see. I don't feel very much optimism. I mean, refereeing has always sucked and it feels worse than it ever has right now. And I don't like the downward trend. And we'll be right back after this break. Next one on my naughty list, Tom. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis, just say what you want. Just say what you want. The soft launch trade request approach here, I just find it very annoying, off-putting. If I were a Bucks fan, I would be like, if you want out, just say it. Just say you want out. He talked in front of the media the other day and he said, basically what Chris Haynes said to me a week ago on my podcast, that it's his agents here in this situation. That's what Giannis said. He's like, if my agent is talking to the Bucks, he's his own person. I personally haven't had that conversation. I'm locked in on my teammates and getting back healthy. He said his teammates have asked him about it and all that as well. Just say what you want. Just say you want to go somewhere else. Like, just come out and say it. You know, have some balls. That's the way I feel about the situation with Giannis right now, Tom. Just say it. Instead of this beating around the bush, trying to avoid accountability, trying not to be the bad guy, you know, I want out. Like, just say it. That's where I'm at with Giannis right now. I'd just be so annoyed if I were a Bucks fan.
It's plausible deniability. That's what it is. That's what Giannis is saying right there. He's hiding
behind
the shield.
He just doesn't want to be the bad guy.
It's exactly right, but it muddies the waters for sure. It's just, it feels awkward, and he's trying to play. You know, he's trying to shield himself from any sort of the criticism when he's putting it all on the agent. And this is what happens with agents. Their job is to get you what you want, right? That's what you pay the agent for. And so it might be the case that Giannis said to the agent, like, I don't want it to be coming from me. Here's what I want to happen. And you're going to take the fall for me, is that you're going to take the bullets, you know, out publicly. And I'm going to be able to, like, just say, I haven't talked to them. I haven't had any conversations.
Great approach.
And then Doc Rivers.
Great approach.
It's working great because Doc Rivers seems to be fed up with the way this story is being handled, right? Where he has to every night, it seems, on the media press conference, just be like, look, he hasn't made a trade request, so enough. Well, everybody knows what's going on here. Just because Giannis does not voice specifically to Doc Rivers and the front office does not mean that he wants out. This is what the plausible deniability on both sides is, that Doc Rivers can sit here and say, I haven't heard from Giannis. And Giannis can say, I haven't said anything. But we both know what's going on here, because Giannis has not said the thing which I think everyone wants to hear in Milwaukee, is I did not demand a trade. I have not demanded a trade, and I will not demand a trade. I want to be a Buck for life. And he hasn't done that. And so absent that, we're going to be hearing this for a while and just people playing it in the media.
I mean, when this thing first dropped, I wrote the article on Yahoo. And I, at the end of it, I was like, you know, he wants the freedom to leave without the guilt of being the one who said goodbye. Like, that's the way I closed the article. And that's really the way I feel like he's trying to play this. I think this is not sourced. This is just my gut feeling. I think Giannis wants the Bucks to be the one who pull the plug here, and the Bucks to be the one to say, well, this season's not going the way we wanted it to. We got this amazing offer for Giannis. We're the ones ending it. That's where I think Giannis is trying to angle this towards going. That way it's on Milwaukee for trading the greatest player in their franchise history, the guy who brought them the title, not his own decisions here. That's what I think they're trying to play this as, even though everybody, you know, can see what it is with Giannis and his side having skepticism about his place in that future there. Because the point is, you know, really, Tom, for the Milwaukee side of things here, you know, right now they have the ninth best odds in the lottery, and they don't get to choose if they keep their pick or not. That's going to be Atlanta. Atlanta gets the New Orleans pick or the Milwaukee pick. They get the best of those two picks. And so, you know, it's a very, very low probability that both New Orleans and Milwaukee would move into the top four. That's like a below a 5% chance, you know, statistically. But, you know, if Milwaukee, you know, ended up with the sixth best odds or the fifth best odds or something like that, and that New Orleans pick is in a similar range, you know, if you're the Bucks and you end up with the eighth pick or the seventh pick, this is a good draft. And you can still get a really good player there and build for your future with on top of whatever you were to get for Giannis. Whereas if you bring Giannis back and you sneak into the playoffs, this team as is not going anywhere. They're not going anywhere with Jeremy Grant or Zach LaVine or these names. There is incentive for the Bucks to trade Giannis, is my point. If they get a massive, massive return in return, that's just going to be the whole big question. Is that actually on the table for them this season? But I do think if that is the path for Giannis and what he desires, there is incentive for the Bucks to do that. That's my underlying point here. What's next on your naughty list here, Tom?
Well, before we get to that, I just want to point out that the Atlanta Hawks just gave up 152 points in regulation to the Chicago.
Crazy, huh? How about that?
So my third eye is open. Do you think Chicago is trying to get Giannis out and is like, yo, we're gonna put 150 on the Atlanta Hawks? So the Atlanta Hawks are like, yeah, we'll throw back that pick in order to get Giannis Antetokounmpo because we need it defensively. We need it. We need that guy.
Oh boy, so, can you imagine that? Oh my god.
I'm just saying. Giving up 152 points in regulation to the Chicago Bulls, that feels like that is a tipping point problem with the Atlanta Hawks.
Is Giannis even solving Atlanta's defensive issues? I mean, I think Jalen Johnson belongs on the nice list for his offense, but defensively he's not quite at his peak right now. That defense is horrible. Just disgustingly bad after they got off to a really good start. Atlanta did. So their whole defense belongs on the naughty list for sure, especially after that game against Chicago.
All right. Well, I'm going to put the Lakers on the naughty list here. In a weird way, I kind of feel like the Lakers are the luckiest 19-8 team I have seen in NBA history. They are not a good defensive team. And I think JJ Redick and the organization knows it. That they just don't have the defensive players to upgrade around Luka Doncic and really contend at the highest levels. They're the 22 ranked defense in the NBA, and I do think they need to trade Austin Reeves. I really do. I think it's time. The guy deserves to be the guy. Capital T, capital G. In the 5 games that he has not played with Luka Doncic, he's averaging like 48 points or 40 points and 9 rebounds a game. The numbers are incredible. Austin Reeves deserves to be the guy. It's not going to happen with the Lakers as long as Luka Doncic is there. And the Lakers can't really upgrade defensively and get the wings that they need to defend at a high level. If Austin Reeves and Luka and LeBron are on the same team, I just don't see them having an average defense. I think it's going to be almost impossible for them to be a title contender with those three players on the team. And I do think him being an unrestricted free agent this summer, where he's basically, you know, do a $250 million contract over 5 years from the Lakers this offseason. I feel like the rubber's got to meet the road at some point. And the Lakers have to really evaluate how we're going to build around Luka. And is Austin Reeves that guy? And to me, it is so damning that the three players in the top 10 in the slowest miles per hour defensively in the NBA, three of them are on the Lakers. Austin Reeves, Luka Doncic, and LeBron James are three of the 10 slowest guys, cover the least amount of ground per minute in the NBA. No other team, Kev, no other team has multiple guys on that list of the slowest moving, hide me defensively. I'm just going to park myself on the guy in the corner and take a breath and take a break defensively. The Lakers have three of them, Kevin. And JJ Redick's supposed to build a championship level defense out of these three guys. I think it's untenable. And I do think that the Lakers, with his unrestricted free agency coming up, I wonder if they are going to make some calls here to trade Austin Reeves. And I wrote about this for TomTheFinder.com. I think there is a trade suitor here for Austin Reeves that makes a lot of sense for both sides. And I think it's time. I think the Lakers are 19-8, but they have a net rating of a team that's like 14-13. Like, they are a 500 team. And they got three guys who are triple-double threats, but they can't defend at all. And I think something's got to give.
I just pulled up your article on Tom the Finder, and I'm scrolling down, skimming through.
Yeah.
New Orleans, I see with your baby. Lakers section. New Orleans for Austin Reaves. Interesting. So get back Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, both of them. Or is that what you're angling for if you're the Lakers? Or what do you have in mind there?
Yep, the Lakers trade for Trey Murphy III and Herb Jones and get two guys who are high-level athletes. Trey Murphy is he reminds me of like a supercharged version of Derrick Jones Jr. for the Dallas Mavericks a couple years ago next to Luka. Lob threat, great cutter, good shooter, high-volume shooter, which is what you need next to Luka Doncic, not just a guy who's he's going to be able to kick out to. But talk about the vertical spacing of him cutting off ball and him able to lob it up to Trey Murphy. And then defensively, you get one of the best perimeter defenders when he's healthy in Herb Jones, who feels like he's one of the more underrated players in the league. And because of he's playing in New Orleans, and I feel like on the Lakers, those two guys, I feel like could do a lot for them in a way that if you're New Orleans, you're giving up on that core of a 7-22 team. And I know Trey Murphy's got a bright future, but I feel like it's Jeremiah Fears and Derek Queen and Austin Reaves. How many, it feels like the James Harden thing in OKC where it's like, how many times are you able to, going to get like an all NBA talent who's the third wheel on a really good team that you can maybe get him before he makes that leap into a superstar? And Austin Reaves, man, he's the guy. Like, he can be a fulcrum of your team, but just in LA next to Luka, I don't think it's a good fit. They have a negative point differential together. LeBron, Luka Doncic, and Austin Reaves on the floor. Three triple-double threats every night, and they're a losing team with that three-man lineup on the floor. And I feel like something's got to give here, and I look at New Orleans as maybe that's a good fit.
So, I mean, look, I think part of me agrees with you that Austin Reaves is the piece to dangle. But part of me also looks at this team and thinks long-term, Reaves and Luka really like each other. They played great together before LeBron came back. Is the solution merely goodbye LeBron James? You know, either he is open to a midseason trade or he decides just to leave next offseason. Is that the inherent solution with Luka and Reaves? Or do you think, you know, then you're just wasting this year of Luka? Is that sort of your feeling here that it doesn't, that you're open to breaking up Luka and Reaves long term in order to make it more of like a Maverick style, Luka centric team with other supporting pieces a la Trey Murphy, a la Herb Jones? Is that sort of where you are here rather than the Luka Brunson style thing as it would be with Luka Reaves?
Yeah, I feel like Luka, it needs to be built 100% around Luka because he is just this gravitational pull that it feels
they
like to me.
Austin Reaves having both of those 19, guys. Tom, not 19.6 net rating this year with Luka and Reaves without LeBron. Is LeBron actually the uncomfortable third wheel in this situation now, though?
It's possible. I just think long-term, Luka needs better athletes, better defenders, and I feel like Austin Reaves could be the piece that gets him those guys. And Austin's great. He's going to become a lot more expensive for the Lakers, and if you're going to make that commitment to Austin Reaves going forward, you got to believe that he is 110% the best fit next to Luka Doncic going forward. And I just feel like two really minus defenders, it's going to be really hard to build around those two guys going forward if you're going to have two zeros defensively like that. And I just feel like going forward, yeah, the sample size that you're mentioning with Luka Doncic and Austin Reaves without LeBron James, it feels like that's a really impressive net rating. I just feel like come playoff time, it's going to be really hard to play Luka Doncic with another one that needs to be hit defensively. And we saw last year, it's tough to play those two guys together and be able to defend at a championship level. So that's my thing. Like, in order to win a championship, you need to have multiple guys who are superstars on both ends of the floor. With Luka Doncic, you're not going to get that. Can you sacrifice another guy on that team to have another guy that is just a one-way player? It's really hard to build a championship with two guys who are like that. And so that's why I think maybe Austin Reaves needs to be moved.
How the hell did Nico Harrison not get Austin Reaves back in the Luka trade?
It all comes How back to Nico Harrison, man. It all
How
comes back
hell
to Nico.
How the did he not get Austin Reaves? I mean, he's the last one on my naughty list. How could we have a 2025 naughty list and not put on Nico Harrison? It did happen in February. It did happen this year. He gets Cole. Nico Harrison gets bunch of coal. for this year. What he did to the Dallas Mavericks and that entire city, state, fan base, trading Luka for AD. And the, how do you not get Austin Reeves back in that deal? I mean, we're talking about Lakers. What do you get for Austin Reeves? They should have just gotten Luka.
Crazy, man. Like, and think about, I gotta imagine that Cooper Flagg, Nico Harrison is the biggest Cooper Flagg fan, because without Cooper Flagg, I feel like the volume would be like 10 times higher on Nico Harrison.
Oh my God.
Like, imagine if they didn't get the number one overall pick after that trade.
It'd be nuts. Oh my goodness. What was the Nico line after they got number one?
You see the vision. People are starting
Fortune favors the bold or something. What was it?
Well, I forget.
I think that was it, though. I'm pretty sure that was the line. But yeah, Nico, you can't do this list without putting Nico on here. I think, you know, you can't have a naughty list without the Clippers as well. Literally naughty. Allegedly. Mm-hmm. Allegedly naughty. I don't know. As I was going through this, Tom, there wasn't, I'm sure I would love for people to comment who's on their naughty and nice lists, but I felt like the nice list this year was a lot longer so far, but that might just be my nature. I'm a positive guy, but I wasn't finding a lot of clear cut naughty lists, individuals or teams this year.
I would say Achilles tendons and calf strains that put them on the naughty.
So
list.
Like,
I think if there's anything
that, like,
negativity,
the god of basketball for allowing this to happen. I mean, who goes on that naughty list?
Yeah, I think it is.
Who goes on the list?
It feels like, yeah, who goes on it? Because you can't put God on a list of naughty list. Can't do that. That's asking for a lightning bolt, you know?
I know, so, right? Yes.
Asking maybe it's worse just the protein or the maybe it's the cartilage. Do we put
cartilage?
Cartilage on the naughty list doesn't feel right. But that's of negativity or things that have not worked out in the past year. I feel like it's that if you haven't read it yet, my feature last week for Yahoo Sports, the two scariest words in the NBA, calf strain. It's still, you know, we see Evan Mobley and Austin Reeves being out with calf strains right now. It's still a very big crazy problem in the league that we're trying to figure out. So I'll put that on the naughty list, Kev.
Crazy. I think that belongs on there. Just the Achilles tendon. The Achilles tendon belongs on the naughty list. Tom, hope you have a fun Christmas, man. I hope it's a very, very Merry Christmas for you and your family, man. Any plans this week?
Yeah, I'm going to see my dad coming into town. It'll be great to see him over the holidays. And yeah, Kev, enjoy the lasagna. I'm jealous. I need a report next week on how great that lasagna was. I'm very jealous.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to just gaining a bunch of weight and then losing it. Lasagna. Ice cream. I can't wait.
A lot of mint M&Ms being consumed in this household, by the way. That's my favorite candy, by the way. It's a seasonal thing. The frozen M&Ms, frozen mint M&Ms in particular, I put it into the freezer. I just think that it's something I cannot have a luxury year round, or else I'd be, I would look like the Michelin man if I did that. Mint M&Ms. I'm glad it's only around. The holiday mint M&Ms are only around for like a month, because I can't handle it. I can't handle it.
I wish I could enjoy one of the greatest sadnesses in my life, Tom, is I don't like chocolate. There's nothing I can do about it. Ever since I've been a kid, I just don't like it. I mean, I don't like carbonated drinks. I don't like olives. And I don't like chocolate. There's nothing I can do about it. That's it.
Okay. Is this a trait that you have gotten from your parents? That do they not like chocolate?
No.
Did they have?
Nope.
Did you have a chocolate mishap as a child?
It's nope. My dad loved chocolate. My mom really likes chocolate, even though it gives her headaches. She you know, so she avoids it for that reason. But she really likes it, loves it. It's not from them. I don't think either of my grandparents any of them on either side disliked it either. It's just a. It's from, like, the way I would describe it. It's like, you know, some people say cilantro tastes like soap. I think it is something. Oh, you're like that. Okay. So that's mm-hmm. like that for me what's the ingredient that's in chocolate that's also in chicken mole? Because I don't like chicken
cacao,
mole either. Yes. Yeah. That's bean. I think it's something with that, because I don't like chicken mole. It tastes disgusting, chicken mole. It's just really something.
I sent you a box of chocolates for Christmas, and so now I gotta change that. You're gonna think it's like a lump of coal now.
It is a lump of coal, pretty much. I'll bring it to the Christmas party. That's what I'll do.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, everybody. I will send my batch of chocolates to other people. I will give it to the others and save it from you, Kev.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Tom. I much appreciate that. Merry Christmas, Tom. Merry Christmas to the entire staff producing this show and your show, everybody at Yahoo Sports. And Merry Christmas to you guys for always listening to us. Please be sure to follow at Yahoo NBA if you're watching or listening on YouTube, or you just want to check out Yahoo's videos. We just launched our Yahoo NBA YouTube page, so be sure to go check that out. Subscribe, please. Would really help us out. That launched this week, December 22nd. So got a whole bunch coming. I'm going to be doing some breakdown videos as well. Big Number's going to be on there. My show's on there. Dunker Spot's on there. We get a whole bunch of stuff on the Yahoo NBA YouTube page. So be sure to go check that out. And Merry Christmas, everybody.